Juliet Dogcast Radio. If you like dogs, wherever you are in the world, we're the show for you. Hello, and welcome to episode 77 of Dogcast Radio. In this show, we talk to author Stephen Foster about the rescue dog who inspired him to write.
He came with some psychological problems that you couldn't really know what they were. You'd have to just speculate. He was found in Thetford Forest when he was about 2 months by a dog warden, and he did quite well to survive at all.
We also have the Dogcast Radio news, and I'll be talking about walking the walk. But before all that, at the moment, we're hearing a lot about the credit crunch, and it seems everyone is looking for ways to economise. Owning a dog can be a very expensive business. Who better to ask how to save money at the vets than a veterinarian herself? So I spoke to Paula Terrify about how we can all spend less on our dog's medical treatment.
Well, prevention. Same thing true for people. The better care you take of your dog, probably the less it's going to be seen by the veterinarian. So I preach prevention to all my clients. The more that you're willing to do in the area of diet, exercise, nutrition, at least it lessens the odds that your pet will be sick and necessitate a visit to the vet, which is going to, of course, cost you money. But I will say that general checkups are necessary because we do find things much earlier, which ultimately will cost you much less money if you ignore the problem. And I have a rule that all pets need to be examined at least once a year from head to toe. Because, you know, at least when we're not feeling well, we know we're not feeling well. We'll go to the doctor. However, our pets can't always tell us what's wrong, and we're not always observant as that there is a problem. So actually, veterinarians are more like pediatricians. I mean, we really do have to look for clues and look for signs. And that's all part of what the physical exam is. And so taking your dog in or your cat once a year is really a very basic minimum requirement. And when you do that, be sure your vet is doing a very thorough physical examination. And what I mean by that is I have a kind of a checkpoint list that I tell people. I think I put that in my last book, the one we wrote about allergies, solving the mystery of your itchy dog, because examinations are so important to finding clues. So basically, your veterinarian should be starting at the head and going all the way back to the tail, regardless of whatever problem you're bringing your dog in for. So I want to make that point, too. Whether it's just your routine annual exam or your dog's not feeling well or the dog's scratching, well, let me tell you what I think a good vet does, and I've learned to do this myself. You start at the head, because if you start someplace in the middle, you may forget to look in the mouth, under the tongue, down the throat, in the ears, palpate the lymph nodes in the neck. So you've got to start at the head, and you should be watching your vet. I mean, this is a clue to you as to how thorough your vet is. And after the head check is done, and you're watching, is your vet looking inside your dog's mouth, looking at the teeth, looking at the gums, looking for sores, looking for tumors? Is your dog vet palpating the neck? Because we've got lymph nodes in the neck that can come enlarged and point to disease. And then after that, I'm sort of putting my hands down the animal, sweeping, just feeling for lumps and bumps just anywhere in the hair coat. Then I'm putting on my stethoscope and listening to that dog's heart and lungs. Mm-hmm. Must do that. After I'm done with my auscultation of the chest, my hands are moving down to palpate the abdomen. And the abdomen starts right behind the last rib. Once you get behind that last rib, you can gently start pushing in to palpate for enlarged livers, enlarged spleens, maybe a big kidney, maybe something that doesn't feel right in the gut. So that's an important way to assess, could there be a problem in the abdomen? And next, as you go down and make your way to the tail, you really need to look under the tail. Not a pleasant picture, but for sure one that needs to be done, because I find tapeworms, I find anal sac problems, I find little tumors in that area. And so make sure that you're watching your vet, because this is a clue. You dog owners, you know, you do need to assess whether or not your vet's being thorough. And then the other part of every physical exam in my office is check the dog's body weight. I find sometimes just a drop in weight, even though the owner hasn't noticed particularly, the dog's not eating as much, you know, off the food a little bit. The owner may never even tell me that. But when a dog comes in and I check the weight from the last visit and I find an unexplained weight loss, then I start asking more questions. So these are the things, these are the reasons why your dog needs to be checked up at least once a year. And I make it pretty much mandatory in my practice. What I send out in my practice, Julie, as you know, is I don't send out little cards, little postcards every year telling you to bring your dog in for this shot, that shot, and this other shot. Mm. That's not what my letter says. My letter says it's time for your pet's annual physical examination, and we may update vaccines, and we may not update vaccines. So the focus needs to be based on the exam, and veterinarians that are really kind of staying ahead of the pack, in my opinion, are calling people into the office for checkups. And whether or not the pet gets vaccinated depends on a number of things. Depends on how old the pet is. Depends on the travel habits of the pet. Depends on past illnesses or current illnesses and the age. So all those things are risk factors. And to me, if a vet's not asking those questions, a vet's not as concerned about possibly over-vaccinating your pet. And there's another way to spend money that you don't need to spend: unnecessary vaccines. So, again, I hate to keep plugging my book, but I did write a series of books, mostly because of the conversation that we're having with you. I'm trying to educate dog owners, trying to get them better dog care. Of course, everybody wants to save money, but without information, you really don't know how to do that.
Yeah. So it's obviously important, as you say, we take them for a checkup and that problems are discovered, you know, as early as possible. So presumably, if you spot something that you think, you know, is a problem behavior or a symptom or something, presumably, you know, we need to go and consult the vet as soon as we spot that.
Oh yeah, if you're in your mind, if you're questioning a lump or a change in your dog's appetite or the dog's starting to have ongoing loose stools that don't look right, I mean, yeah, unfortunately, you can do a little research on the topic. You can try to prepare yourself with the right questions, but I think a lot of us kind of know when something's not right. The idea is not to avoid the vet, but the idea is to do a little checklist with yourself. And let me tell you the things that I would say would necessitate a vet visit and what you might be able to wait a couple days on. Because when people phone me up and say, you know, my dog's had diarrhea, should I bring my dog in? Oh, not necessarily. First of all, how long has the dog had loose stools? Is it just 1 or 2 days? And the most important factor, I say, is your dog eating? Is the appetite off along with this problem diarrhea? If I have an owner that says, my dog's eating fine, my dog's acting fine, and my dog is not vomiting, which worries me a lot more than diarrhea, I'm probably going to say, if that's a client that's been in within the past year, and I have some updated medical information on the pet, I'm probably going to say, you know what, let's put your pet on a bland diet for a couple days. And if the stools are not improving, I do want to see the pet, and I do need a sample of the nasty poop brought along with you. But however, if somebody tells me, yeah, my dog's got diarrhea and she's off her food and not acting right, you got to bring the pet in because something more serious may be going on.
Paula, why does vomiting worry you more than diarrhea?
Well, vomiting worries me more because it can be a sign of a graver symptom. Vomiting was associated with more serious diseases like a kidney disease, like pancreatitis, like a really bad gastrointestinal infection, liver disease. See, those things are more of a tipping point for me. Not always. I mean, I have dogs that throw up for a day and the next day they're fine. So just one day of vomiting won't necessarily have you make me want you to bring the pet in. But I'm asking a lot of other questions. If the dog vomited just one time, that acts fine, and okay, well, maybe that's a 24-hour wait. I'll put a 24-hour wait on that dog, and I'll say, look, don't feed your dog for a day because we don't feed vomiting dogs. You take away the food. You don't ever take away water. So what I'll say to the owner, okay, take away the food for today, and if your dog is not eating tomorrow or vomits again, into the vet it goes. So people need are just simple guidelines, guidelines to follow. So if you're concerned and want to bring your dog in because it's vomiting or having diarrhea, I'm not saying not to do that because it never hurts to get your vet to look at your pet. But if money is a concern, then I'm trying to give people some guidelines to follow that maybe they can put this off a day or two and wait and see what happens.
Yeah.
Because I get a lot of calls. I probably get the most calls we get at the office that my staff takes in is, my dog's got diarrhea. You know, now listen, nobody likes diarrhea. It's the most common things we treat, and it's usually, most of the time, benign. I mean, dogs are going to get better with a simple diet. I might add some probiotics, and I may give that dog a couple days. So, and every dog owner's been faced with that. So again, they've got to have other symptoms besides a day or two of some loose stools. And if the stools are actually getting better, and that's the other thing I tell my clients, put the dog on a bland diet, add some probiotics. But if things aren't slowly getting better, then there's a trip to the vet. But once you have kind of some bad diarrhea, you can expect some change in stools for maybe 3 to 5 days until things are back to normal. But if they don't get back to normal, then it's a trip to the vet.
So what else can we sort of maybe wait, or what means no go now?
Well, whenever an animal's not eating, doesn't want to eat its food, that always worries me. You know, so a dog that doesn't want to eat for more than a day, you know, there's no question that dog should be seen. That's a rule for me.
Yeah.
Or vomiting that's not stopped. Oh, yeah. Or, you know, the dog's not just vomiting one day. The dog's vomiting now into day two.
Yeah.
There's another worry.
Yeah. You know, with the not eating, I'm just thinking, with our dogs, they are very different. My Labrador, you know, if he doesn't want his food, I know something's seriously wrong because he just doesn't turn food down. Our other dog, you know, she'll maybe miss, you know, if she doesn't eat breakfast, then she's hungrier for her dinner. You know, we split feed. So I guess somewhere along there's got to be sort of common sense, hasn't there, that if this is very different behavior from your dog, that's another.
You are absolutely right, Julie. You're absolutely right. Because that's another central point. Knowing your dog is a pig and it doesn't want to eat should really worry you more than your dog that's kind of a one-day eater. So always that's a factor. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
So what else then is there anything else we need to be looking at and thinking, we need to at least phone the vet?
Well, one of the things, I just told you what my major category is. Now, if you've got a dog that's scratching and pulling out its hair, that's probably not going to get better without some care too. So there's many reasons why dogs itch. I don't know if you have a flea problem in your part of the country. You plagued with fleas?
No, we're not dreadfully, actually, no.
Well, fleas are a real big problem in my area. And I see pets every year that if the owners had been doing proper flea control, they wouldn't be bringing the dog in that's now scratched or off spot on its rear end and is going to need to be medicated. So in terms of prevention, again, what's one thing we have control over? I mean, we do have effective parasite control programs. People need to, in our country, in our part of the world, they need to start that in spring and all summer. So what problems do you have? Give me a little more information about people in your town.
To be fair, I mean, I'm saying there, no, there's not a problem with fleas. I mean, I'm touching wood now, but neither of ours has ever picked up fleas. However, you know, I do give the treatments every 3 months, isn't it? They have well, I won't say the name, but they have a treatment sort of that you drop onto the back of the shoulders to stop that. And for example, when we went up to Scotland, they both had that just before we went, so that that would, you know, kill off any ticks or anything they picked up. So that is a problem that's around, and we do treat our dogs over here, you know, for that. And similarly, you know, the worming tablets, that's something else that we do so that they don't pick up that problem.
All right. So, yeah, you just have to use some common sense. Also, when our season changes and we get into the rainy season and it's cold here, fleas are not very prevalent. So I tell some of my clients, try your pet without flea control. You know, starting around November and December, January and February, and those are four real quiet months. So you, in terms of saving the cost of applying flea control, some of my clients just do fine in the winter, and they don't have to start again till the spring. So fleas are sort of seasonal. So are heartworms. So people that are using heartworm medication, they may not need to be on that year-round either. You should do some research on that because, again, heartworms, like fleas, they're kind of temperature-dependent. And so there's certain times of the year when the temperature gets too cold, really don't have even a mosquito problem.
Yeah, yeah. Now, when we are buying the, you know, the medication for them, for these, you know, this preventative medicine, where's the best place to buy that from?
Well, first you want a quality product. I can't tell you how many times people have gone to the pet store and come in to me with what they're using, and they've wasted their money pretty much. So the best products I have found for flea control, applying Advantage once a month, not every 3 months. Now, in Frontline, just so people are aware of this, people have been confused. Frontline says for tick control every 3 months. But for flea control, it's just like Advantage. You have to use it once a month. So if fleas are what you're targeting, it's every 4 weeks. And the other thing that people should realize is it really, even though they say that these products can be used even after you, after you bathe the pet, I have not found them to be as effective with somebody, for instance, who wants to bathe their dog every week and then put flea control on once a month. I don't recommend that. I say if you're having a flea problem or your dog is known to be allergic to fleas, these are the dogs we have to practice the strictest flea control on. Because what people have to understand is not every dog is allergic to fleas. But for our flea-allergic dogs, we have to be extremely vigilant because these dogs will just be very uncomfortable because they'll be itching them like crazy. So on my flea-allergic dogs during the flea season here, I tell people to apply it if they want to bathe their dog more often than once a month and they want to bathe their dog every 2 to 3 weeks, then they need to reapply the Advantage. And it's also important to know that you have to apply the Advantage the following day after the bath. Hmm. There's a reason for that, because the vehicle itself needs a little bit of oil in the hair follicles for it to distribute it evenly over the hair coat. So you don't want to make the mistake of giving your dog a bath, towel drying it or blow drying it, and then sticking on the topical application. Wait till the following morning and do it. And it is safe enough to use every 2 to 3 weeks if you're bathing more often than once a month.
Yeah. Oh, that's a useful tip, though, not to do it straight after the bath.
No, not to do it straight. And the other thing I've seen pet owners make the mistake of doing is putting all of it on the neck. You know, what you're supposed to do is depart the hair coat and as best that you can, and look for the skin, look for a straight line of skin. You start on the neck, and then you move it down towards the shoulder blades. So on small dogs, you'll pretty much get the size that only kind of, you'll run out past the shoulder blades. But that's fine. Your dog's not going to be able to lick that area.
Yeah.
So don't put it all on the neck. Start at the back of the neck and go and move it down in a straight line with the hair parted. With the bigger dogs, you really need to put it and I'm saying about dogs that are, you know, over 40 pounds, you really need to put it in four locations along the spine. And it'll show that. The directions do show this, but some people aren't reading them. You need to go sort of the neck and shoulder area, the mid-back, the lower back, and down closer to the tail area. So because they have a larger surface area, the bigger dogs. So you need to apply it more down the spine.
Yeah. Okay, that's great. So obviously, you know, you're saying go to the vet for these products, presumably, so that you get, you know, one that's going to work. It's not just going to be throwing money away. But do
you... Well, yeah, you want to... let me finish. I know where you're going with this. There are a lot of online retailers that are selling Advantage and Frontline.
Hmm.
So if you can find it for less money, then, of course, as a consumer, that's our free choice. But do buy the recommended product that your vet's using. If don't get the imposters, don't get the other stuff to save money. Buy the good products. If you can find it cheaper, it's a free market. And that's how you want to buy it. That's the way it is. And those are the two products that I find work best for fleas. The other thing is, when you go into prescription medication, I do have a different opinion about that. I think when we're buying prescription medications, you need to work closely with your vet on that.
Hmm. Why is that, Paula?
Well, I've had some trouble with some of these online pet companies filling prescriptions, and there's a long story behind that. But I mean, everybody, you can do what you want, but if my opinion is medication that you're buying should be prescribed by the vet out of your vet's office, and your vet should know what you're doing.
Yeah.
Because your vet is working with... We're talking about prescription drugs now, not flea control. I really don't feel as strict about flea control. My only comment there is to make sure you're using it correctly. And, you know, when you buy products online, you're not, and your vet doesn't know you're using Advantage or Frontline, they're not going to tell you you're not going to get the information on how to use it properly. I've just told you how to use it properly. You're not going to get that information from an online retailer. No one's probably going to tell you that. They're happy to make the sale, that you need to read the instructions. But I've given you like a little bit of extra information that, you know, you don't get that when you buy products online.
No.
So work with your vet when you're using prescription medications, because we need to tell you about how to dose the medication properly, what time to give the medication, if you should be giving it with food, without food, side effects that could occur with the medication. You don't get that kind of help when you buy medications online.
No, that's
my opinion.
Yeah, and presumably, you know, you're going to have to review medication sometimes and maybe stop it or, as you say, change the dose. So that needs to be handled very carefully, doesn't it?
Yeah, I just really feel that there's a place for keeping your vet in the loop. And when they start writing prescriptions for online retailers, we sort of can't keep track of you as well.
Yes.
We don't know what's going on as much. Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so how do we find a vet who is, you know, as well as being good for our animals, can we find one that's good value as well?
Well, to me, good value is quality care and at a reasonable price. Quality care is where it's at. As far as value goes, to me, that just means, to me, in my opinion, value means quality. And you get what you pay for. That's everywhere you go. I really believe that pet owners may need to go to one, two, or even three different veterinarians before they find a vet that they feel comfortable with, that communicates well with them, that answers the questions, the facility is clean and it doesn't smell, the staff is friendly. I mean, you really do need to put some time into this, because you're selecting a doctor for your dog. That's a huge decision.
Mm.
Because animal care does vary across the line. It really does. And just because somebody has the credentials behind their name, whether it's an MD or a DVM, that doesn't ensure that you're in capable hands. I will be the first one to tell you that. So you need to shop for your vet. You need to shop for your own medical doctor. And so be sure that when you're in there, you're with a veterinarian that will spend time with you, that will answer your questions, that doesn't try to brush you off, that respects your concerns, that is handling your animal. I mean, don't you want a vet that likes your dog?
Mm.
I mean, I just don't mean that in a nasty way, but it's just, to me, it's been in my observation, is your vet compassionate?
Yeah.
You know, and I don't mean it in a fake way. I mean it in a real way. So be prepared when you go to the vet to write a couple questions down that are concerning you so you don't forget to ask the vet. And I'd like to give pet owners another clue because I think it's really important to establish a good relationship with your vet because a good, healthy relationship gets better. Your dog is going to get better care.
Yeah.
So be prepared when you go in not to ramble on. I don't mean this in a bad way, but I know from my own experience that it's much easier for me to get the job done when I'm not distracted by a lot of information that's not helpful. And sometimes that's a lot of conjecture by animal owners. They just kind of start talking about something that happened last week and then the week before that, and then the neighbor came over and then the neighbor said this, and then they called their aunt who had this, and it just rolls on and on and on. So what your vet really wants to do, we are detectives, okay? That's what your vet's doing. The first thing we're doing when you're sitting there with a problem with your pet is we got to start asking questions. And before you ramble on with a bunch of stuff, just try to answer the questions first. Be patient and let your vet start asking. And your vet needs to take a thorough history. So when you answer the questions, try to give the best information you can without adding extra things to it. At least let your vet get through all the questions, and then if you don't think the vet's addressed some of your concerns or maybe you have another piece of important information, then add it at the end. Do you see where I'm going with this, Julie?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because a lot of time can be wasted when I have to wade through a lot of extraneous information. I don't need it. It's distracting to me. And I know my colleagues have the same problem. So be prepared to help your vet. And you can best help your vet by giving good information and not asking a lot of questions, not barraging them at least with a lot of questions right out the gate.
Yeah, yeah. My usual one is I'm guilty of this, that I'm chatting away and then she's trying to listen with, you know, with the stethoscope, and I'm going, do you want me to shut up? Yes, please. Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's so easy to see. We understand how enthusiastic, and you know, I like to see when my pet owners come in. I like to see them care. I like to see them being concerned. It makes me want to, you know, jump in and do everything I can. But in that initial interview, your vet is got to think, and we got to use all of our training. So allow the first 5 or 10 minutes to be your vet's, at your vet's discretion. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And
yeah.
after the questions, after the physical examination, then I think that's the appropriate time to say, to bring in some other information, other questions. Because in the very beginning when we're thinking like crazy, don't distract us. That's all I can say. Wait till the end, because I like to get my game plan going. I like to get my thoughts collected. So that's how you can help your vet. And also, that's how you can evaluate your vet. You want a thorough vet. You want somebody who is asking good questions, who is really looking at your animal.
Yeah, definitely. You sort of, it rang true with me when you said you want someone that likes, well, that, you know, you feel likes your dog, and genuinely.
Yeah.
And like you say, I mean, I don't want somebody that's going to pretend to like my dog. But I can remember on sort of one occasion, one vet I felt was very brusque with him and with my Labrador. And I felt that she didn't really like him. So then when she was telling me that he needed to lose weight, you know, and I'm thinking, well, you've just got it in for him, you just don't like him. And it's very difficult to take that advice as it's meant from someone that you think, well, you don't,
right,
you know, you don't like him anyway.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I can kind of, some doctor, and that doesn't mean she's not necessarily a good doctor. Some, you know, some people fall short in them building relationships. I think that's where relationship is building is so key. Is I would, and I've told some of my colleagues in conversations we've had, you know, kind of watch how you word things. And yes, it is our job to tell you if your pet is overweight, because that is another way to prevent problems with your dog. If you're looking for preventing problems, I can tell you for a fact, if you allow your pet to be overweight, you're going to compromise the joints.
Mm.
They will not last as long. You will have an earlier onset of arthritis. and other problems that come along with being overweight. So we do have to be tactful about how we say it. And it's not, and I can easily see how people can take that personally and maybe as a judgment on you. I've learned the hard way. I do honestly believe I've offended a few people, especially early in my career, especially if they were a little heavy to begin with. I have to be a little gentle about how I say it. Sometimes I kind of make it kind of funny now. I really kind of kid a little bit, but I'm serious about it. But I've said things to my clients like, Toto will not be getting in a bikini this summer, okay? There's no way.
Yeah.
And that sometimes I get people to just kind of laugh a little bit before I put the hammer down on them and say, look, this is what we need to do.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, as you say, I want body to be healthy, and but it's just that wasn't why I thought she didn't like him. It was, you know, just the way she was with him, and she was quite cold with him. And I just thought, ooh.
Quite cold with him.
Yeah. You know, he's very, very affectionate, and she was just so didn't want to know. And I thought, oh, right, okay.
Yeah, well, sometimes it's a personality thing. Honestly, I'm trying to lay out some guidelines and some tips. I have seen some very good vets with very lousy personalities, but you know, you guys as a pet owner, so I can't say that's a no-no, but it's the other reason to kind of have it be a concern is because it's going to strain the communication. If you're feeling like your vet is brisk and not open and welcoming, then that's going to affect the relationship you have with the vet. Communication's not going to be as good, and communication is really, really key. So, I would say that's still going to have to be a factor that you weigh in when you're evaluating a vet. Is this a veterinarian that you feel comfortable talking to and is listening to you?
We'll be hearing more from Paula in the next episode of Dogcast Radio about why it's important to establish a good relationship with your vet, as well as some more money-saving advice. In the meantime, you can find out more about Paula and her excellent advice at her website, 30minutevetconsult.com, which we have a link to on the Dogcast site. If your dog doesn't like someone, you probably shouldn't either. Unknown. You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com.
Hello and welcome to the Dogcast Radio News Desk. I'm Kate.
And I'm Nick. We know that sometimes fishermen exaggerate their catch, but did you hear about the fisherman who caught a dog?
Well, it's true. Jimmy Thompson was almost a mile out in the North Sea fishing when he spotted what he thought was an otter. He took his boat closer and saw the animal was actually a dog. Freddie the Cairn Terrier was quickly caught and safe aboard the boat. However, due to the fact that the boat was staying at sea for a few days, the Coast Guard had to send a boat to pick him up and reunite him with his worried owner, who had been searching the beach but never suspected Freddie might have swum out to sea. Happily, Freddie was given a clean bill of health by his veterinarian. And sticking with shaggy dog stories, did you hear about the Australian dog who saved a litter of kittens?
Well, yes. Leo, a Jack Russell Cross, refused to leave his burning home without the kittens and was rescued by firefighters along with the litter he was found guarding. Due to smoke inhalation, Leo was given oxygen and heart massage, and the kittens also needed medical treatment. The human family members, who also escaped the fire, were glad to have their tiny cats and their hero dog safely back, and apparently have nicknamed Leo Smokey.
And on the subject of emergency room treatment for dogs, identity theft means many of us choose to shred paperwork before throwing it away. But it seems that shredders and dogs don't mix. In the UK, Rascal, a Springer Spaniel pup, got into his owner's office, and his dangly ear dangled too close to the shredder, setting its blades in motion. Owner Jackie Wells had to take poor Rascal for emergency treatment with the shredder still attached to his cut and bleeding ear. Vets operated, and although Rascal lost some ear tissue, once his fur grows back, it shouldn't be too noticeable. And there's no chance of Rascal getting into trouble with the shredder again, as Jackie has replaced it with a model with a safety cutout device.
The American Veterinary Medical Association has produced its 2007 U.S. Pet Ownership and Demographic Sourcebook. The statistics included make fascinating reading. For example, while there are 43 million dog-owning households in the USA, there are 37.5 million cat-owning households. However, there are more cats than dogs in the country, 81.7 million cats versus 72 million dogs. So clearly, there are a lot of multi-cat houses. Cat and dog owners make other different choices too. Cat owners are more likely to be single, while dog owners are more likely to be married with children. Another difference discovered was that while 82.7% of dog owners visit the veterinarian at least once a year, only 63.7% of cat owners do so. Other intriguing facts brought to light are that women are the primary caregiver to most pets. Almost two-thirds of pet-owning households own more than one pet, and they spent a staggering $24.5 billion, yes, billion dollars, on those pets in 2006 alone. The source book is published every 5 years and is available from the AVMA website.
And finishing with our medical theme, most dog owners have had to cancel engagements to look after a sick dog. And actor Jean-Claude Van Damme recently cancelled his public appearances to promote his latest film JCVD so that he could stay with a poorly puppy he has adopted. The film star has apparently rescued 7 dogs from Bangkok in Thailand. And when one young dog fell into a coma, Van Damme knew where his priority lay, and he stayed with the pup. And that's all from us on the Dogcast Radio News Desk. Goodbye.
The pug is living proof that God has a sense of humour. Margot Kaufman. I recently read Stephen Foster's funny, honest, and often moving book, Walking Ollie. This is the story of rescue dog Ollie being adopted by Stephen and his partner, and how their relationships developed. It's one of those books that dog lovers reading it will find themselves saying, "Oh yes, that happened to me," particularly over the conversations and acquaintances struck up while dog walking. But there was one thing I felt I had to get off my chest first.
Now, first of all, I do have a confession to make, because I am a Labrador owner, and you don't seem to like them terribly much in the book.
Well, I always knew it was slightly risky to do that, because obviously I'm attacking the principal breed in the UK, and we did have, I don't think we ever actually had a conversation, the publishers and I, about it. I don't think they ever raised it. But it was in my mind to say, perhaps I oughtn't to do that because I annoy so many people. I do make an apology later on, mind you. And, you know, now things are quite different. And, in fact, one of Dylan's principal friends is called Stan, and he is a golden retriever.
Oh, well, yeah.
So we go out walking with Stan and his owner, Will, quite frequently. So it was a sort of novice-y problem that I had.
It's quite amusing, you know. But I just thought, oh, better cards on the table, better get that out the way first.
Yeah, well, occasionally, of course, the other, which didn't occur to me so much, but I suppose might slightly have been in the back of my mind, was that I would meet people subsequently who might have read the book, and they would be Labrador owners that I knew already. But you don't really think that's going to happen because you never think you're going to sell any copies. So that's a sort of abstract problem that, or a rhetorical one that you're not really expecting to encounter. But, of course, it did well, Ollie. So there were occasions when people said, "I saw what you said about Labradors." and I could only say, "I'm sorry."
Yeah. Well, we're a nice breed to pick on. We're not going to be terribly.
I think so.
Yeah.
He just was on. I think Ollie was unfortunate in that he encountered a lot of let's say there were just stiff people who happened to have Labradors, half a dozen in a row. Maybe it just was just one of those coincidences, like when buses turn up in threes.
Yeah. Now, as you say at the beginning of the book, you're not a very doggy person before you get Ollie. And you talk quite interestingly about the visits of your partner's Dalmatian and sort of hiding away your good clothes and things like that. And that's really funny. I think there is a period of adjustment when you first live with a dog, when you have to make those kind of sacrifices almost, don't you?
Yeah, well, I began like that, and I stayed like that for quite a while with Ollie, and I was still roll some sellotape around the back of my hand, you know, and take hairs off my jacket and protect the inside of the car with blankets and things like that. But you become a dog owner is what happens to you.
Yes.
And then you cease to care about your appearance.
Yes, yes. Happens to us all.
Occasionally, I sometimes think, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go out and I'm going to buy some really excellent dog walking clothes. I'm going to do it in style, as it were, but I never ever get around to it.
No.
I'll spend 500 quid and I'll look really smart even though I'm covered in, you know, what they kept coaching.
I know. It's a lot of what you wrote in the book really took me back. And you decide to get a puppy. And so you go and visit breeders. And there's a lovely story of your visit to this Vischler breeder.
Yes.
Yeah. And it reminded me, when we first went and looked at Leonberger's, which we didn't actually go on to get, but we hadn't got a clue. And what I realised now was vet bedding, you know, the white fluffy bedding that you can get for them. We thought it was a doormat and we were wiping our feet on it.
Yes.
But they are slightly mad, aren't they?
Breeders are, well, I don't know who listens to your show, but I don't mind. Breeders are insane, aren't they? I mean, I haven't come across one that isn't yet. I mean, they're nice, but,
yeah,
you know, they're special. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I think
the Vischler lady had a Vischler fridge magnet in her kitchen attaching, you know, her shopping list to the fridge.
Yeah.
And I just looked at it and thought, oh, I can't believe you can buy a thing like that. But apparently you could.
Yes, yeah.
And then subsequently, of course, we've been to events where there have been lots of dogs. The Lurcher Link website, people have a lure coursing day at the East of England Showground, and you go to something like that. And you see lots of things that you're surprised are for sale.
Yes.
In the world.
Yeah, you can get anything of your breed, can't you, almost?
Yeah, you can. You can get, what can you get? T-shirts, bobble hats, badges. it's a bit like being a football fan, in fact. And then you can say, well, that's perfectly normal. Hundreds of thousands of blokes walk around with shirts with Stoke City written on them and what have you, don't they?
Yeah, so that puts into perspective, doesn't it?
You can put it back, you can take it right around the circle and say it's normal.
Yes.
As long as you regard football fans as normal, you're fine.
Well, definitely. The other thing that you mentioned, which reminded me of me before I got a dog, was you get this giant book of the dog and you start working your way through and seeing what you like.
Yeah. That really is preliminary theory, isn't it? I mean, you just look at the pictures and you go, which one of these would be best for me? Which is, it means nothing, does it?
No.
Until you've got a dog. And in the giant book of the dog, all breeds are make excellent pets. and are fabulous and friendly companions. They're all child-friendly, and there's nothing wrong with any of them.
Yes.
You can have anything you want if you go to the giant book of the dog.
Yeah.
The only difference is there's a lovely little graph in it that shows you in four blocks how much grooming they need, space, food, and exercise. So they go up in blocks of three or four.
Mm.
So you might say, well, I don't want that one. It needs four blocks of everything.
Yes.
That one will be too time-consuming.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that was how we ended up looking at Vischlers, because I saw the picture of the Vischler knowing absolutely nothing about them.
Yeah.
I like, you know, that dog looks nice. That's the kind of, that looks doggy to me, as it were. That's the one we'll have.
Yeah. But I think that's the way a lot of people approach it initially, sort of, what does it look like? Yeah, it looks good. We'll go, you know, and then you need to go and check it out further, don't you?
Well, there's a definite visual aspect, isn't there, at the outset, I think. Some people go, oh, terriers are just fabulous, aren't they? That's what I'm going to have.
Mm.
And other people go, no, I need a Leonberger.
Yes.
Which is what you,
yes,
where you started.
Well, it was, you see, the theory of that was it might make me look smaller, you see.
So that's not bad. That's ulterior, isn't it?
Oh yes, yeah. Now, in the end, you don't end up with a puppy. You go to it's Dogs Trust now, isn't it? Dogs Trust Centre.
Yes, as it was. It was the Canine Defence League, as it were.
Yeah. And they bring out this dog, Ernie.
Yeah.
And I love that you couldn't keep his name as Ernie because the Benny Hill song drove you mad.
Well, I just kept singing it once I'd... And in any event, he wasn't an Ernie, but, you know, it's like when you get a song trapped in your head.
Yes.
it not only does it annoy you, it annoys your partner and everybody else when you start singing it. But he came out and, you know, we weren't looking for a pup. They don't put them on display at the Dogs Trust, if they have them. They used not to, at least 6 years ago when we got Ollie, because... For obvious reasons, isn't it? They'd go first, wouldn't they? Mm. Everybody would want to say, because puppies are cute, and the old dogs would have less chance. So they were watching us pause by greyhounds and deerhounds, where we were actually pausing, and then they said, are you looking for a hound? To which question I was able to say yes by then, because I decided that a retired greyhound was what we were going to have. Rather than two Vishla episodes had failed for one reason or another. The first breeder only had one pup and she wanted to keep it, and there was a second failure for some different reason that I can't quite remember. I think it was to do with us moving house. And but then I was pursuing the idea, and I thought a retired greyhound, act of charity and everything, would be perfect. So there actually were some retired greyhounds there, but they were taken already. So the staff member came and said, are you looking for a hound? And I said, I suppose we are. And that was when she went to find the lurcher that she'd got hidden away in the back, just waiting.
Yes, one she prepared earlier. Mm.
Well, he was very charming. You couldn't say he wasn't that.
So yeah.
That was it, immediately, really.
Yeah. Now, it would be lovely if we could say, you know, he came to live with you and that was the happy ending. But it didn't happen quite like that, did it?
Well, no, that's why the book was written. I mean, I would never... I was already a writer. I'd written some fiction and some non-fiction, but it never crossed my mind I'd be writing a book about a dog until about a year after we'd had him, by which time we'd finally gone through all most of the appalling difficulties that we were to find. We ended up having... Now, Ollie is a Saluki greyhound, and I think Salukis are... Well, I know by now that they're kind of difficult in the sense they're slightly nervy sometimes. They're lunatic, really, more or less always. But he came with some psychological problems that you couldn't really know what they were. You'd have to just speculate. Because he was found in Thetford Forest when he was about 2 months by a dog warden. So, and he did quite well to survive at all. He was about 4 or 5 months when we saw him. And he was really slight. I mean, there wasn't very much of him.
Mm.
But he was really also equally beautiful. What you couldn't tell was that he was going to turn out to be psychologically complex, because he came home and he was apparently more or less okay.
Mm.
Although he was never that keen on me, really. But he also didn't like being indoors.
Mm.
And he still doesn't, really. He would definitely live on a beach if it was up to him. That's where he's happiest, is lying in the sand at Winston-on-Sea, so I take him there often.
Yes.
So that we can do that.
Yeah.
But, you know, he was afraid of a lot of things, and one of those eventually turned out to be me, but it didn't begin like that. It took him about 6 or 7 or 8 weeks to decide that I was a scary man, and then once he decided that, it took him a very long time to undecide it, as it were.
Yeah.
And he wouldn't come back when I let him loose. His body language was shocking when I came into the house, so it was a long, long time.
Yeah.
Very difficult. And I was a novice dog owner.
Yes.
Trevor wasn't my partner. I mean, she'd had dogs before. She, even saying that, she'd had a few in her life. She was at least able to say, but I've never seen one like this.
Yeah.
You know, he'd got the full range of difficulties that you can have. Of which he was fantastically accident prone, so we were real regulars at the vets as well.
Oh,
so,
dear. Yeah. There's some very poignant parts in the book. I mean, where I mean, it's not portrayed particularly as poignant, but, you know, when Trezza and a friend have walked Ollie and the friend has accidentally caught him with the stick when he sort of brought the stick back to throw for the dog.
Yeah.
And he's feeling very sorry for himself. And then he will, you know, take comfort from you. And you say very amusingly in the book, you know, I actually considered getting somebody, you know, paying somebody to clonk him on the head every day so that he would bond with me. And, but, to, you know, that is to me poignant because you do so desperately want to bond with this dog and want him to know, you know, you don't mean him any harm. And he's just terrified.
Yeah, well, it was, I mean, it seems, and it's written in a fair, that Walking Ollie is written in a fairly light way at certain points, but there is that undercurrent of it's not that funny, really.
Mm.
And it was very difficult, and I did, you know, I was upset, and so the absolute worst of it, I didn't want to come home where Ollie was, waiting to, you know, go into the corner with his tail between his legs. And I thought, you know, I really seriously thought about sending him back to the National Canine Defence League, but only in theory, because that was never going to happen, because you can't send an animal back like that. You must be able to do better. I mean, that's what you really think. But you know, that's because you can't speak to them. Of course, you can't say what's the matter.
No,
you can attempt to intuit it and everything like that, and finally, you know, in the very end, we did get there. And then that journey is, you know, worthwhile, isn't it? Finally, we've gone, wow.
Yeah.
So can we just go out for a walk now then? And it's almost like, well, I'll mess you about, but I won't actively be afraid of you. That's a great breakthrough.
Yeah.
But it's specific to the rescue, isn't it? I mean, it's because then when Dylan, you know, came along, which is the current book. Of course, it occurred to me to, I looked around all the rescue sites at first because I thought Ollie needed a companion. After about three, when he was about four, he started becoming slightly aloof and withdrawn again.
Hmm.
And I, you know, he would normally play with any dog he would meet, but he was stopping doing that. And I thought, he looks a bit bored all the time. He needs a playmate. So, you know, I looked around the rescues, but I thought, I don't really want to go through that again. And I've never had a pup from the outset, as it were. So the only problems he's going to come with are those of being a dog.
You know,
not of some sort of psychological damage that's occurred to him before I've ever met him.
Yeah.
And various this, that and the other. And if I want Ollie to, Ollie's in any event might not get on with this new arrival terribly well. So it was all slightly risky, although I did do as many tests as I could before he said yes to the breeder on Dylan, which was to say I took Ollie to meet Dylan's dad.
Yes.
Took them out for a run together. Well, if he didn't like his dad, I would have probably stopped it there.
Yes,
but,
yeah.
At least they got on fine. And in fact, Ollie was slightly dominant of him, but not very much. So it was kind of about as good as you could guess it might turn out to be.
Yeah.
Between the pup and... Of course, Ollie didn't really want a pup in the house because that's how he is.
Yeah.
But Dylan is very, very winning, and Dylan broke him down, broke his aloofness and his resistance down, and they are great mates, so it's turned out well.
Yeah.
And they do run with each other a lot. So it's been good for, Dylan's been good for Ollie.
Yes.
It's actually worked.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
so great.
Yeah, I've been checking out your blog, and there's some beautiful pictures of the two of them, you know, at the beach or, you know, perhaps one of them on the sofa. And, you know, is life good now with both of them?
Yeah. That camera, it's a birthday present. It's a nice Canon camera. And I'm not a photographer. The machine does itself, all you could say almost that, but they are very good subjects. And I've never...
Yeah.
I mean, there are probably 1,500 pictures of the dogs on the memory stick and three of me and Trevor. I only use it for one thing.
Yes.
Taking pictures of dogs running. But we're fortunate because in Norfolk, you know, we have... It's famous for light, as it were, because it's got enormous skies because there are no hills. So, very, very few things that look like a hill. So there are... You've got four seasons of the year, and the light is always changing. And we're out at the coast quite a lot. We're only 25 minutes drive from the nearest piece of beach.
Mm.
And, you know, it lends itself to it, let's say. So it's quite nice.
Yeah.
So I don't really take... I got lots of pictures before I had a blog. So the material's just sitting there waiting, because I'm quite lazy, really. I don't want to blog every day, but you can drop a picture on there with a couple of lines.
Yeah.
And that doesn't take very long, and people like to see them. So
oh, definitely. Yeah. One of the things that sort of I loved, and it really took me back when I read the book, was sort of, as I say, that you start off this non-doggy person and you just get sucked, with some reluctance, into the world of dogs. And one of the things that made me laugh that you say is, you lose your marbles when you've got a dog. That's what happens.
Yeah.
And, I mean, one of my questions to you, what I'd like to know is, are you now happily resigned to that, or do you still sort of rail against it and try to keep sane?
Well, you accept it. I mean, when you fully accept what's happened to you is when you've got Dylan sitting on your bed early in the morning and you're feeding him toast. and that becomes a quite regular event, and you just say, well, it's, you know, I would never have really predicted that would happen to me. And I know that none of that's in the book of the dog of how to, you know, train them either. So... Yes, you're a goner, but of course you do sometimes occasionally imagine that you're Daniel Craig, really. but you're not, are you?
But the dogs may see you as Daniel Craig.
Yeah, maybe. If I come along with a shaken, not stirred bowl of food.
Stephen writes with great humour about his experiences, but also with emotion and realism. I thoroughly enjoyed Walking Ollie, and Along Came Dylan is on my Christmas list. You can find links on the Dogcast Radio site to Stephen's blog and to both books. Labradors are lousy watchdogs. They usually bark when there is a stranger about, but it is an expression of unmitigated joy at the chance to meet somebody new. Not a warning. Norman Strung. I had to go for a walk in the rain today. I had to because my dog needed his walk, and it had got to 5 o'clock, it was still raining, and I couldn't put it off any longer. So off we set in the rain on a grey autumnal afternoon, me, miserable and huddled in my hood, Buddy trotting, tail wagging cheerfully. I trudged down the lane, leaning into the rain, and through the gate into the field. There was no one else there, due to the rain, so we had the field to ourselves. I could throw the tennis ball for him, and he could chase it, undisturbed. The leaves, though mostly still clinging to the trees, had turned to beautiful shades of reds, oranges, browns and purples. And actually, it was quite nice. Sometimes, in a busy life, it can seem that walking my dog is yet another chore to fit in. It can seem a tiresome responsibility. I remember one day driving to a nearby wood to walk our dogs. And as I pulled up in the car park, I saw a group of people and a dog returning to their car. There were three women and a man. The women were clustered round the dog, while the man was a little way ahead. It looked like a husband and wife with two grown-up daughters. The mom was using a towel to help the old dog walk. One end of the towel was in each of her hands, with the rest passing under the dog's belly towards his back legs. It was clear that the dog had lost the use of his hind legs, and the group made painfully slow progress. The women either side encouraged and were ready to help the dog should it collapse, which looked like a strong possibility. I'll never know for sure, because it would have been a massive intrusion to ask them. But I think that they were taking that old beloved family dog for his last walk before a final visit to the vet. And it hit me hard. One day, that last walk will come to me and my dog. I may know it's our last walk, I may not. But either way, it will come. Walking my dog is not a chore. It's a chance to spend some precious quality time with him. We've had some great times on walks. Once, Buddy was paddling in a muddy pool in another nearby wood. He was pottering about, pawing at the swirling mud, when suddenly there was a huge splash towards the edge of the pool. By the time I realised that a squirrel had fallen from an overhead tree, the squirrel also realised he had fallen and was on his feet and running fast. He left a comical Tom and Jerry-style squirrel-shaped hole in the mud behind him. Around the same time, Buddy recognised it was a squirrel and gave chase. I was standing directly between the terrified squirrel and the tree trunk he was heading for at high speed. Somehow, both squirrel and dog missed me, as the smaller animal disappeared up into the branches, while the larger planted his paws on the trunk and barked a stern warning. It was over so quickly, with just that squirrel-shaped dent in the mud to prove it ever happened. Walking Buddy has taken me to places I would never have dreamed of going without him. I've witnessed breathtaking views, visited seldom-explored tracts of countryside, paddled streams, and climbed hills I would never have bothered to discover without the need to exercise him. Without that ever-present requirement to get out and walk, despite rain, snow, or the general dreariness that is British weather most of the year, I would take a walk sadly infrequently. Now I know I'm no lightweight. I acknowledge I am what my grandfather would have called a tidy lump. But look at it like this. How much worse would I have been without having to walk Buddy? So I walked in the rain today, because I had to for the sake of my dog. And you know what? I enjoyed it. He enjoyed it. We had fun. And another thing. I think that if I can be happy walking through a chilly, wet field, damply contented Labrador at my side, bag of dog poop, duly scooped, swinging from my hand, then I can be happy just about anywhere.
Thanks for listening to Dogcast Radio, available from www.dogcastradio.com. That's dogcastradio.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us, and wherever you are in the world, we'd love to hear from you. You can do so in a variety of ways. By phone from the UK, you can contact us on 0121 288 0922. From the US, you can contact us on our American number, which is 315 849 2022. From any other country, you'll need your international exit code and then 44121 288 0922. You can contact us on Skype with the ident Dogcast Radio. That's all one word, Dogcast Radio. By email, you can contact me on julie@dogcastradio.com. When contacting us by email, if you have the facilities, please record your questions or comments and send them to us as an audio file. That way we can include them directly in our programme. We can accept most formats, for example, WAV, MP3. All these methods of contacting us can be found on our website, which is www.dogcastradio.com. And as ever, the final word goes to Jenny.
What has 2,000 eyes and 4,000 feet? 1,000 dogs.